What I thought I'd do today is bring to mind something that's actually on the internet, on the news, to try and encourage you to use this thing. It's becoming more and more important to us on a day-by-day basis. This week is the 40th anniversary of the Six-Day War. It is truly remarkable because I was talking to Mr. Bowles last night, and the first thing he said was, well, I can remember exactly where I was when I heard that. And virtually everybody that you talk about, they'll say, yes, well, I remember that. Or when President Kennedy was killed, yeah, I knew exactly where I was when that happened. But a lot of you listening to me weren't there. All our children are under the age of 40. Some of them not very far under 40, but they weren't there. So what I thought I'd do is just run over the land of Israel and have a little bit of a background as to what's going on. If you go back over the news analysis this week, it's rather interesting going back. A year ago, I was putting about 10 or 12 articles a week onto the news system that I felt were well worth everybody reading. At the moment, it's currently running at about 12 a day. Hopefully, in the near future, we'll have it on RSS, which means that as you turn your computer on in the morning, you'll have a little box in the corner with the news all going down, which could be very interesting for you people in the States, because I get to know what's happening over there before you do. So when you wake up, you'll get it hot off the press. Israel, an interesting country. Have you any idea what the population is? I was staggered. It's barely 7 million people. We have more people in London than in the whole state of Israel. Roughly 5.5 million Jews and 1.5 million Arabs. The country itself is incredibly small. When you think of a country, you automatically think of something like where you live. Unless you live in America, and then it's just too big anyway. But it's tiny. Down in South Africa, they have the Kruger National Park, which is their sort of premier game reserve. If you take the Negev off of Israel, which is just a desert, nobody lives there very much, the actual strip of Israel is half the size of the Kruger National Park. In some places, it's 18 miles from the border to the sea. If you stand up on the Golan Heights, you can lob mortars down onto the towns below. It's so steep and so close. It's surrounded by over 200 million Arabs. And yet it survived. If you just turn with me to Zechariah 12, I'll show something very, very interesting here. This is a scripture that's going to become more and more obvious now as we get down into this end time. Zechariah 12, verse 3. You see, this is what God says about Israel. This is what God says about Jerusalem. When we talk about Israel, we're really talking about Jerusalem, because that's the bit that counts. God says in Zechariah 12, verse 3, in that day I will make Jerusalem a burdensome stone for all people. Now, all people, that's 6 billion plus at the moment. All that burden themselves with it shall be cut to pieces, though all the people on the earth be gathered together against it. 7 million people in an area of 8,000 square kilometres. If you want to compare that with America, I think you fired a dart at a map of America, it would probably cover more area. It's tiny, and yet God says this piece of real estate matters, and it matters to me, he says. So what I want to do is just bring another scripture to mind. You needn't turn to this one, but just write it down. Hosea 5, verse 13. There is going to come a time in Israel when things are going to take a turn for the worst. And quite frankly, we're, I think, very, very close to that time. It says in verse 13, when Ephraim saw his sickness, or that can be translated his grief, and Judah saw his wound. The word there for wound is a wound as in battle. They went, Ephraim, to the Assyrian, to the king Jerob, yet he could not heal you nor cure you of your wound. They run to Germany for help. So something pretty catastrophic is going to happen down there. It's not going to totally destroy Jerusalem. So what I'd like to do is just go through the current situation and give you some idea as to what it's all about, and ask the question, could we really solve the problem today? The Six-Day War in 1967 totally changed the face of the Middle East. There was a war in 1948, just after the State of Israel was set up. There was another one in 1956 when Israel invaded the Gaza Strip, and they were kicked back out by the United Nations. And then in May 1967, President Nasser demanded the removal of the UN troops from the Sinai, closed the Straits of Tiran from Israeli shipping, and signed a defence pact with Jordan. And that led to Israel making a preemptive strike, because they saw the writing on the wall. President Nasser had said that he wanted to see the State of Israel totally destroyed. So on the 5th of June, at 7:45 in the morning, they launched their Operation Focus, as they called it, and the first wave of aeroplanes took off, and they virtually wiped out all of the Arab Air Force. The Arab Air Force all got in the morning up in their planes and exercised, flying around, burning up plenty of fuel, which they had plenty of. They then landed and refueled them, and they were all sitting out on the tarmac with a full load of fuel and a hot engine, and one little heat-seeking missile from onto each one, and several hundred aircraft were destroyed. So Israel started off by playing a trump card, and they had total air superiority, which in any war does tend to lead to victory. By nightfall on the 6th of June, they had taken complete control of Gaza from Egypt and Hebron and Bethlehem from Jordan. It's one day. June the 7th, they retook the Temple Mount. June the 8th, they went down to the Sinai. By the end of June the 8th, they were at the Suez Canal. And I remember the next day in the newspaper, one of the cartoonists had a sign there saying, "Welcome to Israel, come and see the pyramids." But they weren't far wrong, because they took control of actually the Suez Canal. On the 10th, they took the Golan Heights in one day. Quite incredible. They lost a lot of men there. They had to drive tanks up roads that you wouldn't even think about driving a car up. It's incredibly steep. And the resistance from the Syrians was tremendous. But they took the Golan Heights. That was it. After 6 days of fighting, Israeli forces had captured the entire Sinai Peninsula, the West Bank and the Golan Heights, and they now controlled the territory four times larger than a week before. And the whole world just stood aghast. Nobody said a thing, nobody did a thing. It was all over before the politicians could get down to arguing over it. So I've just got a few items here that you've got on the news. There's a series of articles which the BBC have done, which are brilliant. They point out the obstacles to peace. And the first one is borders and settlements. And they bring out the fact that even today, Israel does not have clear borders. It's a problem. It says that the fact that complete permanent borders still haven't been drawn 60 years later is a testimony to the rancor of Israel's relations with neighbouring Arab states. It's also interesting that Israel was formed in 1948. 19 years later, a 19-year time cycle later, was the Six-Day War. What is interesting is this week marks the end of a 40-year period, which is a time of trial. So it would seem to have some sort of significance for the fact that we'll probably see if it's going to happen. But it says, because of the absence of final agreement with Syria, Lebanon and the Palestinians, being that Israel's border are in a state that remain inherently unstable. Hamas, for instance, it says they want to avoid a peace deal with Israel that involves drawing permanent borders, because its wider aim is to establish a single Islamic state within the borders of pre-1948 Palestine. In other words, they want to get rid of the 7 million people that are living there, and they want to just turn it into an Islamic state. Another obstacle to peace is water. You know, they've only really got the Jordan River to talk of. It runs down the middle of the country, and it exits into the Dead Sea. The problem we've got is that when it exits into the Dead Sea, you can step over it. It's just a stream. The Dead Sea's dropped, I think, 10 to 15 feet. We were down there in 1970 and taken down to the Dead Sea to the place where all the tourists go and bathe. And sure enough, they were all bobbing like corks on the top of the water. You had to walk about 30 or 40 yards maybe to the water. They now drive you out there in a buggy because the water's gone down. And it's very dangerous because the sinkhole's appearing. Partly because there's not enough water coming in from the Jordan, partly because the Israelis have got a factory down there that's extracting minerals, metal and other things, from the actual water, which is very rich in minerals. 80% of all the water is used by the Israelis, 20% by the Palestinians. So, of course, you've got another great cause there of problems. And everything is increasing. There's natural growth. There's more and more industry. Industry wants water, and there isn't any more. So water is a major thing. In fact, water is becoming a major problem worldwide. The other thing is refugees. A lot of people in 1948 were concerned that the Israelis would come into the land, take control of the land, and slaughter everybody else, which, of course, they didn't do. But a lot of the Palestinians left. And, of course, they've been refugees ever since. So all you people who are less than 40, there are people like you over there who've never known what it's like to live in their own land. They've been refugees all their lives. At the moment, if you take the United Nations figures, there are approximately 7.5 million Palestinian refugees who would want to come back to Israel if there was a peace deal. There are only 6 million Jews in Israel. So it stands to reason that with the Arabs in Israel, plus this lot, the Jews would be totally outnumbered and they'd virtually cease to exist as a state. Major problem. The new West Bank barrier. Israel has built a 700-kilometre barrier around the occupied West Bank. It's an amazing thing. It's 20 or 30 feet high or thereabouts. It's mainly concrete. And some people think that in actual fact this is going to be the new border. But of course nobody likes it. The Arabs are complaining. It's a major thing. It would have to be pulled down in any peace deal. The Golan Heights is another problem. President Assad of Syria has told Israel that he can't actually put troops up there because of the United Nations. But there are 30,000 Arabs living on the Golan Heights under Israeli rule. And they are then planning civil disobedience and worse, terrorism and so on, to get the Israelis to go out. And then, of course, you've got the Palestinians themselves. Two movements. You've got Fatah and Hamas. Fatah was founded by Yasser Arafat back in the 50s. It was the largest Palestinian political faction, and afterwards recognized Israel's right to exist. And of course then you had the Oslo Peace Accord and all that, which really didn't make anything, except that Mr. Arafat with his tito around his head didn't make good news pictures. They lost power in 2006 because basically they were seen to be totally incompetent and corrupt. Shock, horror, surprise for the Middle East. Most of the governments are totally incompetent and corrupt. As you've seen in the news lately, even Britain's been accused of fleecing the palm of some prince in Saudi Arabia with up to £2 million in backhanders to get defence contracts. But of course, we don't do that sort of thing in England, do we? So it can't have happened. Hamas means zeal in Arabic. They are totally committed to an Islamic state on the whole of what is today known as Palestine. In other words, there'll be no Israel left. It'll all be an Islamic state. That's what their goal is. Their charter uncompromisingly seeks Israel's total destruction. But they technically are the ruling power in the Palestinian area. They were elected. So now you've got a problem. We will only in the West recognise a democratically elected government. Now the democratically elected government happen to be a bunch of terrorists. How do you solve that one? Coupled with this now, you've got the mood of the people in Israel. This particular commentator says people are tired. They don't believe anymore in the possibilities of peace. The people themselves as a group are changing. It says in 2007 there was a rally. It wasn't pushing for peace. It was about pushing out an Israeli leadership which the public has decided failed at war. They feel they failed in this recent war in Lebanon. It says conservative estimates place the number of people there at around about 100,000. It used to be that's the sort of number you'd get at a peace rally. At a peace rally today, they said if you get 1,500 people, you think, wow, that's great. So you see, the mood of the Israeli people is also changing. It says they don't believe anymore in the possibilities of peace. And worse, since the terror attacks, people become afraid and distrustful of the intentions of the Palestinians. You know, when even a woman is prepared to walk into a restaurant loaded with explosives and blow herself up in the name of Islam, that strikes terror into everybody. It's horrific. Another obstacle to peace is Jerusalem itself. Ancient Jerusalem has changed hands many times, its religious significance exerting a powerful pull on Jewish, Christian and Muslim conquerors. Everybody feels they own it. Now, the victory in 1967 and the capture of East Jerusalem was an exhilarating time for Jews, both religious and secular. Battle-weary Israeli troops ran through the narrow alleys of the Old City to the Western Wall to pray and celebrate. The story goes that when they got to the Western Wall, there was already one of the religious Jews already there, putting his little paper into the crack in the wall before the actual troops got there. The interesting thing is, under Arab control since 1948, what happened was, immediately after taking that area, which is most holy to the Jews, for some unknown reason, Moshe Dayan gave control of the Temple Mount back to the Arabs, with the agreement that the Jews would have access. It says, under control since 1948, the Jewish holy places have been tantalizingly out of reach to Israelis in violation of the Israel-Jordan Armistice Agreement. The original agreement said the Jews would have access to that mount, but they're not allowed to still. And of course, this is causing a lot of friction. And yet Moshe Dayan said, "We have returned to our holy places. We shall never leave them." And he gives it completely back to the Arabs. I wonder what God thinks about that, because God gave them victory in that war. He threw it right back in his face. It says many observers see the possibility of disaster in Israel's unyielding pursuit of its policies in Jerusalem. They argue that resolution with the Palestinians and the wider Arab and Muslim world will not be possible without compromise on the holy city. There's talk of making it an international city. There's talk about splitting it down the middle. And hot off the news today is the fact that Mr. Olmert, the Israeli Prime Minister, has decided he's going to give the Golan Heights back to Syria. As long as Syria play ball and stop playing football with the Iranians and getting military help from them, and that all the Palestinians will be nice little boys and play football with each other. You wonder at the idiocy of these leaders. It's just not going to work. There is no way in this day and age that Middle East problem can be sorted. It's just totally impossible. It's going to take the return of Jesus Christ to sort the mess out. But do watch Jerusalem, because it's the most important part of real estate on the face of the earth.